Today's episode is brought to you by The Ginger Pod. TV, movies, culture, and everything fun in between. You can check out The Ginger Pod on Stitcher and iTunes. Check them out today.
You're listening to The Renzo Republic.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the program. I'm your host, as always, Remso W. Martinez, and you're listening to what I hope your favorite podcast is, The Remso Republic. This is kind of interesting because this is the first time I actually get to do any type of real post-debate analysis. The other night, we had the stepdad fight between everyone's, you know, unlikable stepdad, Tim Kaine, and the stepdad that kind of creeps everyone else out, Mike Pence. Apart from that, we also have some other updates on independent candidate Evan McMullen and everyone's hated redhead stepchild, Bill Weld. But before I actually go on to that, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest for the night. He's the founder of the Liberty Conservative. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Gavin Lax to the show. Gavin, welcome.
Thank you, Remso. It's great to be here.
So did you watch the stepdad fight?
Yes, I did. I did. I mean, I had a bit of a different interpretation than you did. I'm actually kind of a fan of Mr. Pence, Governor Pence. I thought he did a good job. I think he showed himself to be a bit of a class act. You know, I understand the circumstances he's working under, but overall, I think he had a good performance. And you know, I came out of it with a bit more respect for him, not knowing much about him previously.
Totally. That's the weirdest thing about Mike Pence. I tend to agree with you. Even when he was announced as Donald Trump's vice presidential pick, I wanted to nitpick and find problems with him because I really just didn't want to like the fact that he was on Team Trump. But from when he was a radio host in the 90s to when he was a congressman, to even just a governor of Indiana, I have nothing negative to say about him. And that debate the other night really solidified that.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. You have a lot of these great governors who are, you know, great on domestic issues, whether it's economic policy or social issues. And obviously, they don't really have to delve into any sort of foreign policy areas being governor. So on paper, they seem really good. And I mean, you know, for the most part, even foreign policy wise, he's not. I wouldn't describe him as a neocon. I mean, he's more of along the lines of an establishment Republican in terms of foreign policy, but he's certainly a staunch defender of life, and he's certainly a fiscal conservative. So in that regard, he's definitely I would rank him higher than, you know, most of the past VP candidates or even presidential candidates we've had the past few election cycles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if the guy was setting himself up for 2020, he did a perfect job. The thing that really got me about him was several weeks ago we had Jeff Peterman on the show. He's a former congressional candidate and a writer for the Liberty Conservative. And the one thing he told me was he's not worried about Mike Pence being anyone's patsy because he's his own man and he's, you know, he's a strong individual. He won't kowtow to anyone. And there were opportunities in that debate the other night where he could, you know, defended Trump. He could have sidestepped and been the apologist that many were expecting him to be. But he didn't play that role at all. He stuck with his platform. He stuck with his message. I was impressed. Not impressed enough to, you know, go out and pull the lever for Trump. But, you know, if Pence were to run in his own right, I mean, I would remember this certainly.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot of people who are quite anti-Trump. I've noticed some people post Facebook statuses saying they're now in favor of Trump, and you know they all have good things to say about Mike Pence. Even the most anti-Trump of people, I think in that debate they were basically taking some cues and strategy from the first debate. You know, they didn't want to get caught into having to defend, being on the defense, having to you know, cover ground for Trump's past or his past positions. They just wanted to run a debate performance based on a message, based on going after Hillary. And I think in that regards, he did very well. I don't think it's necessarily he was trying to cower away from Trump in any sense. I think, you know, this was the strategy going into it. Don't be on the defense. Don't address these points. Just go after her. Go after her record. And in that regard, he did an amazing job.
Yeah, I mean, he went after Hillary more in that debate than Donald Trump did the entire hour he was on stage with her last week.
Yep.
I mean, it was really sad. Part of me thinks that Donald Trump probably would have attacked Hillary more if she was wearing a Ted Cruz mask.
I'm kind of with you on that. I feel that, he maybe it's because she's a woman. Maybe that's the elephant in the room that he didn't go after her as much. Maybe I think you have to wake or you have to anger the sleeping giant that is Trump, and then he goes after you. And he hadn't had that experience one on one with her yet, like he did in the primary debates when he sort of let loose and went after people like Bush and Rubio and Cruz later on. But I was upset that he didn't go after her. I mean, at the bare minimum, I thought he would have brought up the emails more, the foundation more. There was a lot of missed opportunities in the first debate, but they appear to have shored that up in time for the VP. But Sunday night is it's a whole different ball game, so we'll see when that happens.
Definitely. And for those of you listening to this now, obviously the Sunday debate will have come and passed, so we're just playing armchair quarterback. With the debate coming up in a couple days, when you all listen to this, a couple days will have passed. But the biggest thing is, I was not ever thinking that Trump was going to just go wild on Hillary. I mean, how can two longtime friends just attack each other that way?
I guess. I mean, I'm not necessarily the most anti-Trump person, and I know they've had a history in the past. To me, I don't think they've been that close of friends. I think he's done the rounds. He's greased politicians. He was always trying to be part of the cocktail parties, the inner circle. So he gave his donations. He rubbed elbows with people. He was always taking pictures with them, playing golf. And I think a large part of his persona, if you want to describe it from a psychological standpoint, is that he's been, rejected from those circles, from those groups, from those cliques, and this is almost an outlet for him to take it out on them. Like, he has the money, but he was never one of them. He never was considered, an elite. So yes, they were at each other's weddings and so on and so forth. But I don't look at him and I think he's part of their crowd, which many have assumed he is, and there's conspiracy theories, etc. But that's just not what I take from it.
No, I definitely hear you. And I mean, I just remember going back to 2012 during the White House press dinner where Obama was making fun of Donald, and as the camera zoomed in on him, you just saw his orange face glowing red, and it was just like, I mean, I knew at that moment. I knew he was not going to run in 2012 because the primaries were halfway through. But gosh, if that was like his origin story of how we got to right here, that was definitely the beginning of it.
That's a great point. And if he ever has something like that with Hillary, then I think all bets are off. I think, when he's not angry, he's not doing good. I mean, his whole campaign is built on frustration and anger and those, kind of visceral emotions. So when he's going into a debate and he's kind of calm, I don't think he's going to do well. I think he's only going to do well from a debate performance if he's angry, if he's ticked off, and if he has that red glowing face that Obama gave him at the White House press dinner. But he definitely believes in the things he's saying. I don't think it's all just out of pure anger and just pure anti-establishment. If you go back, 10, 20 years ago, he's saying the same stuff, the same protectionist stuff, which I don't agree with him on at all, the tariffs and all this. But at the end of the day, I do believe him. And I see that he does believe this stuff. When I look at Hillary, I don't think she believes in half the things she says. And she certainly hasn't had the consistency over all her decades in politics to warrant any sort of trust in her beliefs. Trump, you might think many of his ideas are dead wrong, and many of them are dead wrong, but he certainly is honest and he has held them over decades. So if you want to look at it from a character perspective, I think that's something to consider.
Yeah, and the one thing about Trump that I will give him is the fact that he really doesn't want to be president. That's why he wanted someone like John Kasich to run domestic and foreign policy. And as he was selecting vice presidents, for the longest time, I thought he was going to go with Newt Gingrich because he needed someone who knew how to get things done in D.C. But the fact that he chose Mike Pence, the whole Trump-Pence relationship, because people have been like, why do you talk so kindly about Mike Pence? I disagree with him on like one or two things, but overall, I've never had anything negative to say about him. And as you look at Trump and Pence and you try and compare them to other people throughout history in this type of game, and you're trying to understand how you can kind of forecast the future, it reminds me a lot of Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge in a way. You have the very braggadocious, very popular guy, and then you had Calvin Coolidge. And in a way, I think one of the good things about Mike Pence being being no one's patsy is that if Trump is to become president, hopefully Mike Pence will be able to push him in a more conservative direction, maybe make him not as destructive as many people think. So if Mike Pence can do that one thing, I'll be praying for him and thinking about him and hoping he can, because it's certainly better than the alternative at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree in that sense that Mike Pence is definitely one of the bigger selling points for people who are still on the fence. Like I said earlier, I don't think anyone has a real problem with him from the conservative movement, from Republican circles, and even many moderates, they tend to like him. But, you know, compared to Newt Gingrich, I think Mike Pence acts like the yin to the yang. He's very a different persona, a different personality than Trump. In many senses, I think Gingrich has a lot of overlap with Trump personality-wise. He's definitely more of an intellectual, but you know, he's also kind of divisive, and he does come across as more of an attack guy, while Pence is kind of like cool, calm, and collected VP. So from that perspective, in terms of picking VPs, I understand why he picked Pence, because he's almost in many aspects a complete opposite of Trump. While Gingrich, there's certainly some overlap, and you can see some sort of maybe personality similarities between the two. And also maybe he didn't want to go on this time trip back to the 90s with Gingrich and Clinton and the whole parade.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, it's just everything about this cycle has just been bad. And Mike Pence being involved in it, it's just odd, because it feels like he was always destined for something great, but I don't necessarily think this is going to be that moment. I could be wrong. I've been wrong about everything in this race so far. I thought that Jeb Bush was going to be it and Martin O'Malley was going to be hanging around. But, you know, everything just went sideways out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, everyone had this whole, you know, race completely wrong in many regards. You know, the demographics, the mood, the attitudes of the electorate, everyone was just dead wrong. And you know, in some senses, yes, there are a lot of things to be sad and depressed about this cycle, but at the other time, on the other end of the coin, you know, things are being shaken up, and you know, from chaos, you know, things tend to come out positively, you know, grow. When you're at your lowest point, you can't get much lower. But I think, you know, this definitely sent a message to the establishment. This is, you know, something to be considered. I don't think they're ever going to snub the base as much as they did, you know, leading up to this election, because they have learned their lesson. And there are things to take away from this election positively. One thing that, you know, I kind of want to segue into a bit is definitely on the LP side of things. This should have been their election to shine, but we're stuck with Mr. Sad Sack Gary Johnson and Mr. Sadder of Sadder Sacks Weld, who kind of seemed to have blown this whole cycle for libertarians and for anyone else who was not really in favor of the current two major party nominees. And they've blown it for libertarians. They've blown it from an electability standpoint, from promoting ideals standpoint. And certainly they've only seemed to advance Hillary's cause as acting as their attack dog. But I mean, I don't know what your feelings are on that ticket 100%.
I actually want to talk about that a little bit more, but first we're going to go ahead and take our first commercial break. Folks, hang on tight. You're listening to the Remsa Republic. We'll be right back right after this commercial break.
Take the show on the go by subscribing to the Remsa Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
Today's program is brought to you by Jeff Peterman at the Conservinator Nation. Have you not heard of it yet? Well, for those of you that don't know, the Conservinator Nation is the newest project of former congressional candidate Jeff Peterman. Jeff is a strong and strident conservative and a Christian, and with his newest podcast, the Conservinator Nation, he's trying to basically give people like him a voice outside of the media. Because if we know one thing, it's that the media is not friendly to the ideas of anyone that's not a progressive liberal. And while Jeff and I may have different points, what we need are a free market of ideas, and Jeff is offering that to you. So go ahead and check him out at Jeff Peterman-Conservinator on Facebook, and also check out his website, www.conservinator.com. Check it out today.
This year, the Libertarian Party is breaking through. We need to make sure that our elected representatives are people who put principle over power. That's why I'm asking all libertarians across the country to help me, Alex Merced, run for U.S. Senate here in New York. With your support, I'll be spreading the message of peace, markets, tolerance, and individualism to people all across the state of New York, and also promote participation in the Libertarian Party. help me spread that message and promote participation in the Libertarian Party with a donation at alexmercedforny.com. I promise you, every dollar will go to spreading the message and promoting the party. My name is Alex Merced, and I approve this message.
Folks, welcome back. We have our guest tonight, Gavin Wax from the Liberty Conservative. Gavin, you brought up how I felt about the LP ticket in the last segment. It is sad. It's like the Hindenburg and Hurricane Katrina had a baby, and next thing you know, the recession came in and they had like a disastrous threesome, and now we're just watching this. I mean, it's like all our hopes and dreams, they just came over and took a giant crap on them. I mean, I have nothing but negative things to say about Gary Johnson and Bill Weld at this point. It's just, I gave them the benefit of the doubt for several months, but it's sad. It's really, really sad.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I would define the whole liberty movement into two broad kind of camps. You know, you have the purists who are interested in, you know, someone expressing, you know, the philosophical underlinings of the movement to the letter. And then you have people, you know, who are more pragmatic, trying to advance the movement and its ideas through, you know, acceptability in the mainstream public and political advancement in places like Congress and getting in media outlets and getting the attention to get these ideas out there. And it's amazing that, you know, this Johnson-Weld ticket accomplishes neither. It in fact does the opposite. From that perspective, you have them, you know, basically tarnishing libertarian philosophy with support for carbon taxes, universal basic income. You know, I'm ignoring, you know, their stances on immigration and abortion because there are legitimate arguments on both sides. And then, you know, just from electability and just to get the message out there, they're ruining it as well. He just looks like a crazy person when he goes on these debates, making weird faces, just making just a fool of himself that he's just completely ignorant of the world. You know, this isn't giving us any credibility, any legitimacy, and it certainly isn't advancing our philosophy in any sense. It's just making us look like a bunch of idiots. And many people have come out and said, oh, you know, the whole Lepel's thing, like he doesn't have to know where Lepel is because, you know, he doesn't want to bomb it. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, just no one wants to vote for a person who's running for the highest office in the country, who doesn't have like an understanding of world affairs, of current affairs, of what's going on. Just because I don't want to go bomb Germany, I should know that the capital is Berlin. I mean, this is basic stuff. Aleppo is the largest city in Syria. It's a center of a major conflict. I mean, I don't want to like beat this horse to death, but at the end of the day, they're not electable. They're not advancing the message. They're not principled. They don't check any box that people have been trying to set up for liberty candidates, from Brand to Ron to others from the LP. So it's just a total disaster. And the sooner people realize this, the sooner the LP can fix their problems and nominate someone with some common sense and some principles. But that's just my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And as far as the purism test goes, I mean, people have attacked me on it. And, you know, I try not to apply it to people. If I disagree with someone, I'm not going to say, oh, you're not a true libertarian, and pull out the true Scotsman argument.
Right.
Well, my biggest thing is this. If you consider individual sovereignty and private property and I don't hurt you, you don't take my stuff, we're, you know, copacetic about that, we're fine. But Gary Johnson doesn't even believe in that simple ideal of property rights. I mean, I'm going to bring back the bake the cake thing. If you're right. willing to enforce that BS at gunpoint through the state,
right?
I mean, that just – you omit that. You cross that out immediately. That's like the single requirement, and everything else is semantics and a difference of opinion. But when you can't hit that one check, it's like just leave.
Yeah, and the most, you know, incredible thing about it all is there's a lot of these kind of diehard LP people who think because they happen to be registered and support a party with libertarian in the name that somehow makes them more libertarian. But if you look at, you know, like the Republican Liberty Caucus in the House and people like Amash or Massey, I mean, there are more solid philosophical libertarians within the Republican Party, both as elected officials and in the grassroots, than there seems to be coming out of the LP recently. I mean, you have, obviously, you have on one end, you have the anarcho-capitalists, fine, but then you have this whole Gary Johnson, I guess, establishment crowd, which, you know, makes no sense to me whatsoever. They're like this quasi-left libertarian, kind of mixing in with rhinos. It's like a horrible baby between a rhino and a left libertarian. And I don't know what the appeal is of that ticket, and I don't understand how anyone could come out and vocally support them. And this is coming from a guy, I voted, you know, Gary Johnson the last election, you know, just because I'm in New York and, you know, Romney had no chance to win, and I might as well get the LP over some certain bracket, help them get over that bracket so they get better funding and coverage or whatever it was. I never thought he'd be the candidate again. I never liked him in the past few election cycles, especially when he ran against, ran in the Republican primary, just, you know, splitting up the Libertarian vote and acting like he's more Libertarian. He there's another thing I didn't mention. He's also just kind of like an asshole. I don't know if I could say that, but
go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he's also an asshole. He's a complete schmuck. I mean, I don't understand like how anyone can find anything nice to say about this guy. He's a burnout. He can't articulate anything. He's making us all look like idiots. And then he doesn't even seem like a nice guy. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of Austin Peterson, but, you know, when he threw out that replica gun, I mean, I think that says something to his character as an individual. And, you know, there are videos I remember from behind the scenes of the Libertarian Party debates. He just seems – it's a mix of awkward and a mix of just snobbiness. So I was a governor. You know, no one cares, Gary. No one cares. You're just irrelevant at this point. The least you can do is just come across as a nice guy, and he can't even do that. That's why the whole sad sack Gary Johnson is just so on point, because he's just a sad sack in every regard, from personal character to beliefs to principles to how he comes across on these interviews. It's just a complete disaster.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that part up. And I'll go ahead and, you know, I'll let out a secret from working on the Austin Peterson campaign. The people that Gary Johnson has working for him, and I'm not talking the volunteers and a lot of the people that came out after the nominating process and everything after the primaries. I'm talking when he announced in January, Gary Johnson's team, from his campaign manager downward to his media people, they are the rudest people I've ever encountered in a campaign. They don't respond to emails. They will trash you. They will bribe people. They are dirty. And you know what? It shows one thing. It's that Gary Johnson's like, oh, well, I'm not a politician. Listen, folks, he didn't get elected to governor of New Mexico just because he was a nice guy. He knows how to play the game. And what made it even worse was that there was this one guy, nobody knew about him unless you were like real deep in the LP. His name was Steve Kerbell. He is the sleaziest con artist ever. And when he dropped out after, you know, accusing Gary Johnson of sending kids who were caught with pot to prison for-profit prisons and like that. After he's just like done smearing Gary Johnson, he drops out and becomes a state coordinator. And that dude's manager, who was also a giant piece of crap, drops out and gets a Johnson position. He just brought in the worst type of people to go work for him. So right. I knew right there it was only going to get worse.
And you could judge a person who they surround themselves with. I mean, we could talk about Rand Paul, and he surrounded himself with a mix of incompetence as well as just rude and just DC hacks. And I think that's a large part of why he failed, because he surrounds himself with terrible people. And, you know, you look at a guy like Gary Johnson, he's just totally taking advantage, and his team is totally taking advantage of the fact that the LP has ballot access. You know, these people aren't really libertarians. They're just coming in, taking advantage of the ballot access and running up their sad sack candidate for another cycle, which is – it's just infuriating that they can't find anyone better out of all – you know, there's so many great people in the LP party, even though I tend to attack it and mock it. There are many great people, many great thinkers, many great minds, and this is who they pick, and it's just so infuriating. In this cycle, we have nothing better to show.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I go, I'm a card-carrying member of the Libertarian Party, but hey, I'm an independent at heart. I left Austin Peterson's campaign to push for Ted Cruz. And right now, in just my own life, I'm trying to help Tom Garrett get elected for Congress out here in Virginia. But in like the grand scheme of things, though, just talking this presidential cycle, we've already talked about how Pence will not convince me to vote for Trump. We've already brought up everything negative, Gary Johnson, Bill Weld. That leaves one thing. How do I vote at this point? And I've already said, you know, I was going to write in Ted Cruz before he sold us down the river and endorsed Trump. So I'm not going to not vote. I'm not going to do the whole withhold consent thing, voting is slavery thing. I mean, come on. I want to be heard in the end. And that's what leaves me with Evan McMullen, just because of straight, you know, process of elimination. He's the last one there. I don't know if you heard about this, but Evan McMullen, he recently announced his vice presidential pick, a lady named Mindy Finn. Have you ever heard of Mindy Finn?
Never heard of her. I just saw that kind of awkward photo they both had that was, you know, I don't know why that's the announcement photo. It looked like, I don't know who took it. It was such a horrible photo, but that's all I know about her and his new pick.
It's like B-roll from the Titanic. They're just looking out into the sun. It's like,
what? It's like at a bad angle. She's not even looking at the camera. It's like, all right, you know, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt, McMullen, but like hire a better photographer or something. Come on. This is like Gary Johnson level amateur stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I gave Evan McMullen a little bit of crap when he jumped in the race, but recently I've become a little bit more, you know, soft-spoken towards him. He's the only person that hasn't disappointed me. I mean, it's just he's the last guy there, and in terms of conservative values, the guy says the things I like to hear, and he has a platform that I can pretty much jump on. So if I want to invest in the conservative movement and these liberty ideas, I might as well vote for McMullen and let people know that when the die was cast, that's how I landed. But I was expecting him to do something a little bit more than this. He had, I think it was Nathan Johnson, the guy that people didn't even know if he was real or not, on the ballot. And absentee ballots out here in Virginia were sent out recently, and it still shows Nathan Johnson. So McMullen won't be able to pull that name from the ballot here in Virginia at this point. The absentee ballots have already been set, so he can't put Finn on there. But if you wanted to seem serious, if you wanted to make an impact, because we could talk crap about Gary Johnson all he wants. He's, you know, all the smart money is on that. If you go to a random person, they're probably going to know who Gary Johnson is versus Evan McMullen. And right, for him to do this, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I have to do some more research on her. I mean, I know McMullen kind of a bit in passing. He seems like a kind of a, you know, a standard Republican sort of just running, taking advantage of this cycle. I mean, his biggest issue obviously is ballot access and name recognition. I mean, he doesn't have a chance in hell. I guess his whole ploy was trying to pull in some of the big funders, you know, of the Republican establishment his way. But I don't think he's been able to do that and secure enough ballots to really make a difference. It's kind of in the same boat as the Constitution Party with Castle, you know, just the simple lack of ballot access, you know, compared to the LP, which is on every state, I believe, you know.
They're on the ballot in all 50 states as of now.
Which is very impressive. And, you know, that's kind of why you probably see a lot of these rhinos jumping ship there, trying to hijack it. But I think what they do really depends on the outcome of this election, whether they try to pick up the scraps in the Republican Party or flee. But that's definitely further down the line. But with McMullen, I mean, he's not on the ballot in New York. I don't really have a strong opinion of him either way. I mean, he doesn't have a chance in hell as far as winning or really diverting votes. I mean, at least I think Johnson, you know, with percentage wise, he might be able to screw things around. But McMullen doesn't have that in the slightest.
So he's not going to get your vote, Gavin?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. At this point, I'm probably voting for Trump, and we could probably go bash heads back and forth on that.
Actually, you know, there's no point in bashing heads at this point. I mean, honestly, I could disagree with you, but I know you well enough that you've got a good reason, and you didn't get to this just overnight.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't my first choice. I mean, I was originally for Rand, and I supported Cruz after Rand dropped out. And I also, you know, now I'm coming on board to the Trump train. I think the Supreme Court is you know, this is one of the most deciding factors. I think his tax policy is definitely an improvement. I completely disagree with him on things like immigration and trade, which are kind of his signature issues. But at the same time, I think, you know, if Clinton gets elected, this is really kind of the beginning of the end for us. I cannot see that woman being president. It would just be detrimental to every facet of our lives, of our freedoms. Trump might be, you know, unpolished, and there are lots of things to say about him. But at the end of the day, I still think that he is a better candidate than Hillary. And you could take that as voting against Hillary more than voting for Trump, but I think I'm going to be voting for Trump.
I don't blame you. You know, maybe a few months ago I would have been like, Gavin, what the hell? But at this point, I don't blame you, and I understand. And, you know, I don't think any less of you because of it. Because at this point, there are no winning options.
Yeah.
There are no real options at this point. And I think everyone has to vote their conscience. And, Gavin, if that's where you have to go, then, man, you got to do it. I'm not going to convince you otherwise at this point. At this point, I think we need to worry more about where do we go on November 9th versus who we cast a vote for on November 8th. I think that's
the thing is that, like, if the way things are going foreign policy wise now, I mean, we're itching ever more towards, you know, real confrontation with Russia and Syria. And someone like Hillary Clinton, who's scapegoating every time she sneezes on Vladimir Putin, I mean, it scares me. It really does, because I think she's dangerous. I think her policies are dangerous. I think the people she surrounds herself with have dangerous ideas. And with Trump, at least at the very minimum, you could talk about, you know, this back and forth kind of bromance with Putin all you want, but I would much rather have him have a bromance with Putin than drag us into any unnecessary war. And, you know, in some regards, he is much better on foreign policy than the standard Republican. He's certainly not a neocon. I like some of his stances that he's made in regards to NATO, in regards to Russia, because I don't want a foreign entanglement. I don't want a foreign engagement. So yes, he's a populist. Yes, he's a protectionist. But on foreign policy, I think that alone could sway many people, because Hillary might be a vote for a war with Russia if you want to get drastic.
Gotcha. So Gavin, we're going to go ahead and to our final segment. Folks, hang on tight. We'll be right back right after this commercial break. You're listening to the Remzo Republic.
Remzo in the mix.
Hello, my name is Alex Merced, and a great way to promote the libertarian message is through libertarian media, blogs, podcasts, videos. At libertarianwingmedia.com, it's an open-door policy for any libertarian who would like to contribute. So just email me at alexmerced@alexmerced.com, and I'll set you up as an author. At libertariansocial.com, you can have a profile, create groups, become friends with other members, message other members, and post blogs. At libertarian101.com, you'll find several videos on pretty much any question you can think of and any issue libertarian. So check those out and make sure to subscribe to great libertarian podcasts, such as the Alex Merced Cast, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, Lions of Liberty, and the Remzo Republic. Thank you very much.
When did failure become sexy? When did repeating the same mistake over and over again sound smart? I'm Lucy Brenton, candidate for U.S. Senate, and like you, I'm worried about the future of our country. I've taught my children simple principles, which our government has forgotten. Live within your budget. Don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. We remember those simple kindergarten rules. Isn't it time our government does? To learn more, check out my website, lucyforsenate.com. That's lucyforsenate.com. Join me and make your vote count on November 8th. My name is Lucy Brenton, and I approve this message.
It's like to go to sleep every night knowing you work for a bunch of psychotic killers.
Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
It is an absolute and total dictatorship taken over by the Chicago mob.
I don't know. I wouldn't be doing this dumbass live streaming if I weren't. So, yes, I still am running for president. Get over it.
Right, nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said.
So much noise from people. I mean, when did we actually go to certain individuals to learn how to think? When was the last time they actually just asked you, make your own decision, come to your own conclusion? There are a lot of talking heads out there, but when it comes to actual factual insightful information, where do I go? There are many good sites out there, but in terms of just one individual I usually keep my eye out for, it's got to be one of the best bloggers I think I've ever read. He gives you the perfect clash of libertarian and conservative in sight. Who is this individual? Well, let me tell you. His name is Joel Curtinitis. That's Curtinitis. Joel Curtinitis. He's a branded contributor at The Blaze. He's at the Liberty Conservative, and currently he's at the Des Moines Register. And let me tell you, if you want to listen to a person that has a dry and quick wit, he's incredibly well-read, and he's just going to give you straight talk. This is it. You can find Joel Curtinitis on Twitter at Joel_Curtinitis, or you can find him on Facebook. If you're looking for someone that just gets straight to the point, gives you insightful knowledge that you're not going to get anywhere else, it's Joel Curtinitis. So check him out today.
How about the rest of us? Right-wing and bitter, clinging, proud clingers of our guns, our God, our and our religions, and our Constitution tell us that we're not red enough.
Avoid the noise of Joel Curtinitis. Folks, welcome back to the program. Enough Trump talk. Now it's time for your absolutely favorite part of the show, Word Association from Hell. Gavin, the rules are very simple. I'm going to say a word. You say the first thing that pops into your head. If you stumble, fumble, pause, go silent, you lose. And if you don't, you're able to get through the portion where things get harder, things get faster. You win the infamous Remsa Republic no prize, which is basically ultimate bragging rights. So, Gavin, are you ready?
I guess. Let's get ready.
Let's do this. Republican.
Decent.
Pam Anderson.
Ugly.
Skype.
Useless.
Books.
Love them.
Dwayne Johnson.
Big.
William F. Buckley.
Decent.
Andrew Jackson.
Trump. Earlier Trump.
Never Trump.
Confused.
Melania Trump.
Ooh, pretty.
Ivanka Trump.
Pretty-ish, or I like brunettes more.
Heidi Cruz.
Nice, she drove in my car.
Hillary Clinton.
Devil in a pantsuit.
Cheeseburger.
I like it with bacon.
Nazis.
Devils.
KKK.
Devils not in pantsuits.
Black Lives Matter.
Racists.
Police militarization.
Horrible, need to be stopped.
Dmitry Medvedev.
Patsy.
UN.
Horrible.
NATO.
Globalists. Horrible. Globalists.
Democrats.
Horrible.
Bill Weld.
The worst of the worst, sad sack.
Department of Education.
Ban it. Destroy.
Conservatarian.
Love it. Great word.
Nationalism.
Better than globalism.
Bipolar.
This election.
Mindy Finn.
No idea.
Independent.
Good for you.
Paper.
Plastic.
Jill Stein.
Crazy runaway from cops.
Harambe.
The craziest meme in history of memes.
There you go, folks. That's Word Association from Hell. Ooh.
Did it have to be word for word? Because I was shooting out phrases at some points.
It was fine. It was perfectly fine.
All right.
So kind of a throwback to Cruz. You hung out with Heidi Cruz. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Joel Curtinitis, he introduced me to some people in the Cruz campaign, and I reached out to them about the organization here in New York since the primary was coming up, and, you know, strangely enough, New York was actually coming into play. So I guess I just, you know, through a bunch of meetings and just working with them, I sort of rose the ranks a bit, and I was basically the state field director here in New York. So, you know, we were scheduling things, organizing events throughout the state, and Heidi with Ted came in. I had dinner with Heidi. She drove in my car. We had to go through all these events because they're a very frugal campaign. They didn't like to spend any money. So everywhere they went, they didn't rent cars. They just kind of, you know, try to like just use other people's cars, I guess. Like, it's kind of good in a sense. But so yeah, she was driving around in my beat up Nissan Sentra around New York, and yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience with her, Ted, and the whole the whole campaign bandwagon.
No, that's cool. I'm definitely jealous about that. And on kind of a side note, I will never have anything but respect for Ted Cruz. I'm still a fan, despite everything.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there are. I love Rand. I love his policies. He ran a horrible campaign. I didn't think he had the energy or the excitement to run. At the end of the day, Cruz basically has a near perfect matching voting record with Senator. I've interviewed Cruz. He understands libertarianism. He's read some of our works. He understands the underlying beliefs, and I think he's a great senator, and I think he would have made a great president. I mean, you could talk about his personal character, you could talk about his political maneuvers, but at the end of the day, if you really want to advance it from a political perspective, you need to get dirty, you need to do what you need to do to win. And I think he's a decent man. I've interacted with him a few times. His wife was amazing. He was a great guy. I loved his tax plan. I loved a lot of his positions. I think he would have made a good president. And I still think he's going to be a good senator. But, you know, there's definitely bad blood, I guess, in the movement between the Cruz camp, people like Joel and yourself. And on the other end of the spectrum, the Rand camp, people like another editor at the Liberty Conservative, Rocco Lucente. So, you know. There's always going to be division. There's always going to be divide. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think he's a definite net positive for the movement.
Yeah. And to kind of close things off, you mentioned that schism. I hope I'm not the only one, but it's gotten to the point. I'll reiterate what I said earlier. You want to vote for Trump, Gavin? Go for it. I'm not going to try and convince you. And I don't think you're making a bad choice. You're not making the choice I'm going to make, but your choice isn't any worse or any better than mine. And I think the biggest thing that we need to remember is that the thing about this entire campaign is it put family versus family and friends against friends. And a lot of the people who I found myself yelling at and fighting with over the past, you know, 4 or 5 months weren't even progressives. They were people that I used to volunteer with and, you know, lobby with and vote with and be activists with. And I really hope that on November 9th, after the dust has settled, no matter who wins, we can all come back together and understand that there are issues above all of us that we need to transcend, because ultimately we can, you know, beat each other into a pulp, but we're just doing the progressives' work for them.
Totally get that. I understand that. And, you know, I have no ill feelings towards people who vote for Gary Johnson or McMullen or Castle. We're all going to come to our different conclusions. At least at the end of the day, if you do respect the notion of, you know, property rights, individual freedom, economic freedom, then, you know, whatever political path you choose to take, you know, God bless you. At least you understand the underlying beliefs. Then, you know, you have my respect and you have my support.
Definitely. Gavin, if people want to follow you and the Liberty Conservative on social media and online and contact you, how can they do so?
Sure. It's facebook.com/libertyconservatives. And on Twitter, it's twitter.com or just at the Liberty Conserve, C-O-N-S-E-R-V. I don't have any public stuff out there, but, you know, follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Go to our website, thelibertyconservative.com. We've got great content, a lot of stuff from Remzo, a lot of stuff from Joel, a lot of stuff from Peterman, a lot of your guests. So a lot of great stuff to read, and check us out.
Perfect. Mr. Gavin Wax, thank you so much for coming on the program tonight.
Thank you, man. It's a great show.
Folks, you know, like I said, go out and vote. Go out and vote. I'm going to vote for McMullen. I think producer Ryan's going to vote for McMullen. I know definitely producer Ryan, but, you know, everyone's going to be going one way or another. And the Gary crew, I understand. I was with you for a while, but I think we all have to do with what we can justify and go to sleep at night feeling good about. And hopefully on November 9th we'll come together. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez. Find me on Twitter at Remso101. Since last time we spoke, I've gone up 400 followers, which is absolutely insane. The podcast and the show is going excellently, and I want to thank each and every one of you. Be kind, love your neighbor, and it's never too late to do the right thing. Good night, America.
Stay connected to Liberty's Rabble Rouser on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with the latest episodes, blogs, and other available content. What are you waiting for?